So let's take our head in quickly next door here. Here we have Christoph Molina. Christoph's a program manager on the base class libraries team.
Okay.
Christoph is also the guy that basically drives the design guidelines associated with managed code. So when you see those guidelines come out, Christoph's the man making sure that all of that happens. What APIs do you own, Christoph?
Bunch of APIs in system diagnostics and system collections, mainly system collections.
System collections?
Yeah, system diagnostics I just inherited.
Just inherited?
So temporarily.
So we're trying to get someone in to take over that stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So he's just holding it over. He's looking forward to the new person when we find the right person.
Keith is hiring.
There you go.
All right.
And in system collections, have we made many changes? What's the focus been for WSB?
So right now we receive a lot of feedback from customers, both internal and external, and we just tweak the APIs. It's, you know, designing reusable collection libraries is more difficult than you would think on the surface. For example, designing a linked list for yourself is very easy. Designing a linked list for millions of people is very difficult. So,
did we make one? Have we got one on WSB?
Yeah, we've got the linked list, and now I'm looking at some of the feedback that people are giving us. So, as I said, when you design a reusable library, you have to make a lot of trade-offs. Mm-hmm. So we make trade-offs between, memory efficiency, runtime efficiency, correctness. For example, all of our collections try really hard to be self-consistent. And that's very, very difficult to do in a linked list that is optimized for maximum performance, for example.
So the big, Chris is so close to collections that he just sees it as a living entity. The big improvement, of course, that we've made in collection space has been focused around the new feature generics that the CLR exposes. And we've made these new collections, such as linked list or tree, I think, is one we're going to expose as well.
Yep.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So here we have a couple of testers working away solidly. Here we have Mike and Ryan, the youngest members on the team, basically. Mike's 12, I think, now, Mike. And Ryan is catching up to him pretty quickly. Young-looking guys. I'm very envious. Hey, guys.
We're over in the corner here.
Let's meet you.
And I thought I'd finish up with a chat to Brian.
That's
fun. Sorry, guys. I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll quickly stick in here and say hello to another tester. There's Katie.
Okay.
Katie has been on the team for a couple of years now, Katie.
Okay. Yeah, about 2 years.
And you're responsible for testing what areas?
I'm testing system and installers and specialized collections.
And you enjoy being part of the PCL team?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
I like the team.
And I'm asking because you've worked for other teams in Microsoft before.
I worked for the natural language group before this, and
What's the coolest bug you've found so far?
Coolest bug I've found.
Katie did some great testing recently around the math class. What was interesting was it's an example that I can think of off the top of my head. Basically, the documentation for the math class for some of the APIs was pretty poor, and it was poor even in the standardized version, the ECMA version. And we basically, Katie did a great job in going in and pointing out that there was heaps of discrepancies, and the documentation we had was just woeful, and making sure that we got all that fixed up, and also found a couple of bugs.
Cool.
Thanks,
Katie.
Nice to meet you.
Hey, Chris, you're going to have to get out, man.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to get out. Can you come back in 10?
This is Chris Hand, another tester.
I just want to talk to your developer about a bug.
So here we have Brian Grugmeyer.
Hi.
Hey there, Brian.
Yeah. How's it going?
People call him Grunt, basically. This is the the name that he has within the team.
What's this picture of?
The picture here is from the Big Four ice caves. This is a weird geological formation about an hour and a half north of here, where for some weird reason this big pile of ice at the base of a mountain gets caves carved underneath it. All this water rushes down the mountain and ends up coming through the ice caves and carves out these really great tunnels.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's your picture?
Yeah, yeah. This tunnel's about 15 feet tall.
Yeah, one of the best things about Windows is
right. Pictures up on your desktop.
Yeah, exactly.
So how long have you been on the team, Brian?
Seems like absolutely forever these days. No, it's been 6.5 years.
6.5 years.
Yeah.
Do you get like a reward for being here that long?
Yes.
You do?
In fact, you do. We have the brilliant little clock.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
This is the reason to wait for Microsoft.
Exactly, exactly.
I'm going to stay here for 6 years.
Yeah.
You got a choice, right? A clock or a pin?
Yes, yes.
You also get a window view on the rain, too.
Oh, yes, yes. Very beautiful. A friend of mine got the clock for his 50-year anniversary, and he said, oh, this is so great. I've always wanted a clock. If I'm not getting another clock for my 10-year anniversary, I'm quitting now.
This is the Microsoft way. So you must have seen a lot of bugs in your time. When we shipped V1, were there any like issues with it that stand out in your mind as something that we wish we'd avoided at the time?
Yes, yes. To be honest, we screwed up in any number of ways with the first version of our product. We fixed most of them in Everett, our 1.1 release. Some of this took a little bit longer. However, I have one very specific issue that's been bothering me for a while. yes? Do you have an... Okay. So,
we just want you to look at him.
Yeah. So, there's... I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but there's something that's a little bit screwed up about the environment class, or at least it was screwed up in version 1. If you've ever looked at the one of our books, such as this, the .NET Framework Standard Library Annotated Reference.
Right, another nature. Nice soul, right?
Yes, yes.
That's a Brad Abrams book.
Oh, yes, yes. And a few other weirdos on the cover, too.
The other people from the ETL team.
Exactly. So in here, for the environment class, you'll see the has shutdown started property. In here, you'll notice that it's a static property, and we added it in apparently version 1.1. That's not right at all. It turns out we really added this in version 1, but I screwed it up. So, what we had in version 1 looked like this. Of course, the environment class is sealed, and it has a private constructor in here, so people can't create instances of it. The idea is that you're only supposed to call static properties on this class. The general design pattern for this is that of sort of a static class. It just defines static properties, and you're never supposed to be able to create an instance of it. Well, in version 1, I screwed up when I added the has shutdown started property. It's this very obscure one that's used for, you know, making sure your finalizers work appropriately during Aptamain unloads and process exits. Most people don't even know it exists, even on our team, which is a little scary. However, I added in this great property here to help you track down problems with your finalizers. And it works out just great as long as you can call the method. I was working here at my desk, writing some code, and I thought I wrote the test case for us, and then someone interrupted me, and then like I basically had to go home later that day. So I came back in the next day, and I could have sworn that I ran the test case for it. So I just checked it. Turns out that I didn't actually compile a test case that, you know, called the method. I left out the static keyword here.
Seems like a critical keyword when you have a sealed class with no constructor.
Yes, yes. The only way you could call this is with reflection, after you create an instance of the environment class, which is just a crazy thing to do. No one's ever going to do that. So we
saw that and we corrected it in V1.1.
Yes, yes. We fixed this in version 1.1 by adding in, you know, the static keyword. But I got really annoyed about this. I'm like, this problem is unfortunately kind of easy to do, and it assumes that you have perfect code coverage in your test passes to make sure you catch this type of problem. So I figured, how could we fix this so that this problem never bothers anyone again? So I thought about this. I'm like, well, the environment class is sort of a static class. You know, everything's supposed to be static about it. So I sent some mail off to the C# team saying, hey, maybe we could formalize the idea of a static class in the language somehow. What if instead of writing sealed here, we could write static? And the compilers would then know to report an error if you ever define an instance method on the static class. It's like, huh, well, that's kind of cool. Then the compiler could be smart enough to say, you know, we don't need this constructor either. That was just, you know, it's useless. Sent mail off to the C# team, and you know, for in 1 or 2 months, they implemented it. Then Anders was telling me about this feature and explaining about this weird property on the environment class. And this is what motivated them to do this. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
So Anders tried to take credit for all this.
It's a very communal process. So, yes.
So it's just good to see that when we do make these kinds of mistakes, and these are pretty fundamental mistakes, we do learn from them, and we make sure that we make improvements, both for ourselves and for our customers.
Both static classes are great improvement.
Yeah.
What are your favorite books, by the way, since I've seen quite a few books on everybody's shelves lately?
Let's see. So there's only a few books I actually recommend to people on this. The standard this book here, the Standard Library Annotated Reference, isn't really the most fun reading, but it's very useful if you want to learn about design mistakes we may have made. Let's see. The one I recommend most often is Jeffrey Richter's Advanced .NET Framework Programming. Anyways, it's pretty good. If you want to learn about the GC and how it's implemented, you look at this book. This one here is also something we came out with recently here at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. It describes some of the best practices about how to write programs, and a lot of weird, subtle stuff that you don't quite learn about unless you work on this team for 6.5 years or you read Chris Broom's blog all the time.
He hasn't been writing his blog very much lately. Yeah. We've got to go up and bug him about that.
And surprisingly, the book I use the most here outside of MSDN is the Unicode book. Now, you would think, why would anyone care about a Unicode book? Especially when it's filled with all these weird characters like this. But it turns out to be surprisingly useful if you end up spending all of your time looking at weird I.O. problems or helping people figure out why do these things not sort correctly in all these other weird Unicode books.
Cool.
Thank you. Thanks,
Brian. And we're out of tape on the first part of the tour.
Well, basically, we're done.
We're done. Oh, great. Now that's good timing.
That's good timing.
That's efficient use of resources.
That's right. We only get to use one tape. We time it perfectly.
Great.
So thanks, guys. Hopefully that gives you an insight into the BCL.
Sure.
And we didn't get a chance to talk to any documentation people today, but it's obviously an important part of the process, and we work closely with them.